Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Thank you for joining us on the program. Stephen Most is a highly acclaimed, award-winning writer, filmmaker. He's written plays, books, documentary screenplays. Stephen has writing credits on 4 Academy Award Best Documentary nominees and 5 Emmy-winning films. His book, River of Renewal, was made into a film that won a Best Documentary Award at the American Film Festival. His latest book, his 4th, is Stories That Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary, a captivating exploration of how documentary filmmakers and other storytellers come to understand their subjects and cast light on the world through their art. It draws on Stephen's decades of experience behind the scenes of television and film documentaries, and writer-filmmaker Stephen Most joining us on This Week in America. Stephen, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Rick. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, and so much to talk about on the program today. And the first thing that comes to mind, nonfiction storytelling. I think we need you now more than ever before with all the fake news out there. This is the right time for documentaries, isn't it?
I think so, yes. Many speak about a golden age of documentaries and the need for true stories that are well-researched and in which all the information is presented in context and seen from a multiplicity of perspectives rather than one very slanted perspective. I mean, this is needed more than ever.
It really is. Stephen Most, our guest on the program, and we're talking about his book, Stories That Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. And I'll talk about the websites for that. Well, Stephen Most is his website. The book's available all across the country. And I'll give you another website you can go and you can actually match up some of the films that Stephen is talking about in his book. You take a look at storytelling in many forms, and it's interesting because there are many forms that go back, some of them a number of years. Talk about some of the different forms that storytelling has taken over the years.
Well, storytelling is a central aspect of human experience, and I began to think about that as I wrote the book, and some of them are visual, some are oral. A lot of people talk about the first creative expression of human beings from the caves at Lascaux and elsewhere in southern Europe, those amazing cave paintings where they seem to correspond to storytelling and rituals, but there's cave art that goes back to South Africa before that, and who knows how far back shamanism goes. I think shamanism is a basic form of storytelling that has strong comparisons with contemporary media. Then, of course, there's epic poetry, which has some bearing on nonfiction storytelling. One of the principal ideas that we continue to use in nonfiction comes from Homer, comes from the epic. But that, of course, led to the theater and to the craft of history. We're familiar with photojournalism, and among the storytellers that I have known is an oral historian, an Upper Skagit woman, Vi Hilbert. I did an interview with her, learned all about her family's tradition of oral history. But also, if you look at a number of people who might be familiar to you as teachers or writers, you might look at them as storytellers, as people whose central activity is telling stories to inspire and inform others. So I think it's really central to our experience.
That's one of the things, as you read the book, Stories That Make the World, you understand that all of us basically are storytellers. This is sort of what we have in common. It's interesting, I mentioned your background, how playwriting really has had an impact. You were able to bring what you refer to as the sensibility of writing plays, the presentation of plays, into your documentary filmmaking. Talk about that, because that's a unique perspective, because in the play, we really get to see things from different angles through different characters.
Well, that's right. It's a way of looking at the world. It's not from the perspective of one person, which we often have in novels. You have a multiplicity of characters on the stage, and you really can't judge them because you see what happens in action, you see how others respond to them. You wait for the story, for the plot to work out. And sometimes a person who appears to be a negative personality will show characteristics that are quite positive, and vice versa. You really can't make that judgment until the story has unfolded. And I think that's a way of looking at life as well, and at subjects that are interesting. From a kind of distance that reserves judgment until we really understand what's going on.
How do you counteract what is, I'll describe as a polarized media out there? People sort of live in their own information bubbles. If you're on one side, this is your source. If you're on another side, this is your source. And I sort of think people are looking for affirmation, not necessarily information. How does the documentary fit into all of that in getting people from basically both sides to look at something and to increase their knowledge of the topic?
Well, I think that's behind the appetite for documentary films that you mentioned earlier, Rick. And it's not only documentary films. There seems to be a proliferation of nonfiction storytelling in our culture. I don't know if you've ever gone to one of the story slams of the Moth, but they have people come up and tell stories from their experience, and they're judged by an audience, which is the best story. That authenticity of personal experience is very powerful and much needed in comparison with people who are saying things that are not true to influence people for all sorts of motives. Then you have the phenomenon of podcasts. There's been an explosion of interest in podcasts, much of which has to do with true stories. You look at Serial and S-Town, which were downloaded millions of times. People would binge listen to them. What's really interesting about that from my perspective is you have a plot line in which the investigator looks at every possible angle of a story to figure out who's telling the truth, what the story is here, what's really going on beneath the surface. And that replicates the experience of a documentary filmmaker, which doesn't enter into the film you see, but that kind of investigation, which can take years, is what enables us to tell a story that will be seen about a true subject that will be seen by millions of people from all sorts of backgrounds. It takes real investigation and understanding in order to do that. And I think that's much needed by the public right now in comparison with the information we're getting from politics and from the internet.
Yeah, as you're reading and you're thinking about it, you're somewhat discouraged. I will say I'm somewhat discouraged because of the fact that we seem to be polarized. Yet as you think about those areas that we're talking about now, that you were talking about, the story slams, the podcast, the radio series that are out there that that really go into what you talk about, you get basically all aspects of the world that they're talking about, leading hopefully to discussion and then greater understanding. So that has to be a positive for you that they're approaching this as you would as a documentary filmmaker.
Well, that's right. It's very positive. And we see all sorts of polarizing and untrue rhetoric in our culture and in our politics, but I think people can be oblivious of reality only so long. That hurricane is going to strike Mar-a-Lago, for example.
Exactly.
And how long do you deny climate change? How long do you act as if the tremendous income inequality in our country isn't a problem? And all sorts of social issues that documentary filmmakers and others, of course, long-form journalists are addressing. So when reality bites and people can't ignore it anymore, there will be the work of filmmakers and others that will help people understand what's going on.
Our guest on This Week in America is Stephen Most, author of the book Stories Make the World, Reflections on Storytelling and the Art of the Documentary. The website videoproject.com/stories, you can stream and download 7 of the films that Stephen writes about in the book, Stories That Make the World. Talk about the challenges now as you try to present a topic. You mentioned climate change, because so many people have their minds made up. What is the challenge as you approach a topic like that, which you've done in the past, enable people to enlarge their own understanding and to see the both sides of the issue. As a documentary filmmaker, what are the challenges you have in presenting that?
Well, climate change is a very difficult subject to represent because any weather phenomenon, any event like a hurricane or a mega fire, a huge flood, that's something in itself. That's weather. And climate change is something that occurs over a very long span of time compared to specific weather events, and its relationship to any one event is unclear. There are documentaries that have shown the impacts of climate change. There's something called drunken forests in the Arctic, because the methane, the permafrost, which contains methane, is not permanent anymore. It's melting, and so the roots of trees are no longer stable. You can see that. There was a great documentary, Chasing Ice, in which the filmmakers actually went to see glaciers and sheets of ice in Greenland and elsewhere cracking in a very dramatic way. So there are things that you can see. But there are also things that you can't see. It's hard to understand that all of the life forms are coordinated in terms of their breeding and feeding cycles, so certain foods have to be available for certain animals at given times. And when that breaks down, when those connections break down, there are all sorts of impacts that we just don't see. So part of the problem is people don't want to know this. We don't want to know how seriously threatened the climate in which human beings have evolved for thousands of years is under the impact of these changes from our industrial civilization. It's really quite dire if you look at it, and nobody really wants to look at it. It's something that we need to face because it's a reality that will affect our lives and the lives of our children and grandchildren.
Your documentaries have really influenced so many people, and as I'm thinking about that and reading the book Stories That Make the World, how has your work influenced and changed you? I'm sure it gives you sort of an ever-evolving perspective of what's going on in the world. It has to touch you as well.
Oh, it definitely does, Rick. I'm interested in a lot of things, and there were many years when someone would propose a film, and it was something that I wanted to know about. And I'd say, sure, I'll do it. I got a call from NASA to do a film about an airborne telescope, for example. That was great. That was a whole education. Or I was asked to work with a filmmaker on a film about a controversial architect, and that was fascinating. But more and more, I'm thinking I really have to focus my time on what I think is important, and this is and climate change is very much my focus, and not just climate change as a threat, but it's really helpful for people to see that there are things that can be done about it, not just to mitigate it, but really to address it in consequential ways. So the slogan that I go by is pessimism of the intellect, but optimism of the will. You have to know what's going on. You have to know how badly things can go. But optimism of the will. You find people who have really creative and consequential responses to this. And that's, in many forms, that's the story I want to tell for the rest of my career.
More with Stephen Most, author of Stories Make the World, after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't don't like it, you get your money back. But you're going to love it. And you're going to love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-915-9058. 800-915-9058. 800-915-9058. That's 800-915-9058.
Are you nearly maxed out on your credit cards? It doesn't matter if you're using your credit cards for fun or to survive. At the end of the month, your statements come in, and you can either pay them or you can't. If you can't, late fees and interest rates get tacked on, and now you're struggling just to make the minimum payment due. Do you feel trapped? Am I talking to you? Good, because I personally researched some companies that can help you. They may be able to reduce your credit card balances by 50% and stop the late fees. If you qualify, please call our special debt hotline number right now for a complimentary, free 5-minute consultation. Deal with your credit card problem now before it gets much worse and put more money back in your pocket. Trust me, I've been there too. Call right now.
800-380-4293, 800-380-4293. That's 800-380-4293.